All right, we're ready to start, ready to rock and roll. So we're in Genesis 45, verse 3. Actually, we're going to just read in English the first couple of verses, and I'll get to the Hebrew of verse 3. Now Yosef could not endure in the presence of all who stood before him, so he called out, "Remove everyone from before me." Thus no one stood with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He gave forth his voice in weeping. Egypt heard, and Pharaoh's household heard. All right, the verse we're going to deal with now is 3. And Yosef said to his brothers, "I am Yosef. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him because they were left. This is an Archgrove translation. Because they were left disconcerted before him. So we're going to discuss that word disconcerted in Hebrew a little bit. In Hebrew, V'yomer Yosef el Echov, Yosef said to his brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Joseph. Ha'od Avichai, is my father yet still alive? V'lo Yochlu Echov la'anot oto, and the brothers were not able to answer him, ki nivhalu mipanov, for they were nivhalu." As I mentioned, Art Scroll translates this as disconcerted, because they were disconcerted before him. I would have translated it as dumbfounded. As we'll see, it's a little bit much. It's much more than just dumbfounded. So we shouldn't be limiting ourselves to one translation. Okay, so the Kliyakar begins by saying Ha'od Avichai. He brings down the verse. Is my father still alive? And as we know, he says, "I am Yosef," and his brothers couldn't answer him, and they were nivhalu, whatever that is. We're going to find out. Afal pi shekavar amru lo shuhu chai. Even though he already told them, that they already told him that the father was still alive. See, if you go back to, you don't have to do now, chapter 44, verse 20 through 34, there's a whole dialogue, and they keep talking about the father being alive. So it's kemuvan mikol divrei Yehuda. It's certainly understood from all the words of the Yehuda in that dialogue that Yaakov was still alive. Mikom mekom chashav Yosef, but we know that Yosef asks again anyway. So what was Yosef thinking? Nevertheless, Yosef was thinking, Ulai Amar Cain. Maybe they said that the father was still alive in this dialogue that took place in chapter 44, verse 20 through 34. Kedei shikamru rachamav al hazakein velo yigrum lo misa. Maybe they were trying to trick him, so to speak. Maybe they were just trying to arouse a certain amount of mercy from Yosef, meaning the brothers, or Yehuda in particular, so that Yosef would have some mercy on this so-called father, whether he was alive or not. Perhaps he wasn't even alive anymore, in order not to cause death to Binyamin. Because they talked about how the father's soul was so wrapped up in this child, in this young man, Binyamin, not a child anymore, that maybe that would arouse this mercy, in other words, so that Binyamin wouldn't be killed. Not necessarily that Yosef could believe them that the father was still alive. So he's asking, is my father still alive? Because maybe it was a ruse, it was a ploy, a scheme on their part, just to save Binyamin by mentioning that the father was still alive. Kinafsho kshura binafsho, because specifically in verse 44, chapter 44, verse 30, it mentions that his soul was wrapped up in his soul. So I'm assuming that means that Yaakov's soul was, or Binyamin's soul was, well, let's say like this, they were trying to imply that Yaakov's soul was wrapped up in Binyamin's soul. I mean, it would kill him if he found out anything bad happened to him. Al kein she'elam shenit. That's why he asked them a second time, "Is my father still? Is he still alive?" Because he didn't believe that they were telling the truth per se, but it was part of that ruse. Ha'od avichai, That's why he asked a second time, is my father still alive? Ulevavam lo kein yidame. And in their hearts, they couldn't even imagine. It wasn't even fathomable. V'choshvu shelo niskavein l'shol im hu chai olo. That they thought that Yosef's intention was not really to ask if his father is alive or not. So we already talked about what was going through Yosef's mind. But what about their mind? That they couldn't even imagine that he was actually asking to find out if his father was still alive or not. Rather, Ela Shabo Lahaskir Avonam, that he was only saying that to remind them of their sin. Al Kain Amar, therefore he says, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? Lomar, to say, this is really what Yaakov was saying, Sha'avihu V'lo avichem, that he's my father, but he's not your father, to the brothers, or to Yehuda. Ki lo chastem al tzaro, ki lu eino avichem. Because you, the brothers, Yosef speaking, you, the brothers, you didn't have any pity on his pain, meaning Yaakov, our father, as if he wasn't even your father. You imagine the pain that Yaakov went through thinking that his son, Yosef, had been killed, not knowing what happened to him. And it wasn't just one day. It wasn't a trick for a minute, like a joke, a bad joke. It went on for 22 years. Al kein nivhalu, remember that word nivhalu, as the article translated as disconcerted, v'lo yochlu la'anot davar. They were so astounded by this idea. It's my father, Yosef, but not your father. You didn't even treat him right. Remember, he's reminding them of their sin, that they were shocked. I like the word shocked or dumbfounded. They didn't know what to answer him. V'otam acher al behelazu. And another reason for this dumbfoundedness or disconcertedness or shock. Lefisha Amar, Ani Yosef. When he said, I am Yosef, and he did not say, Achichem, your brother. I am, you know, you're one of the brothers here. He didn't mention the brotherhoodliness. He didn't mention that. Al Kain Nivhalo Nichpazu. That's why they were in shock or startled. Sham Ro'oda Achazatam, and fear, a quakingness, like a Quaker, quaking, trembling, seized them, took hold of them. Ki amru, since they said, pen yivakesh liyot oyev umit nakem, perhaps he's seeking, he desires to be our enemy, or our avenger, and our avenger, v'hisia es atzmo min ahava, that he removed himself from this brotherlyhoodness, because he didn't mention, I'm your brother. I'm Yosef, he says. He said, yo, I'm your brother. You know, like, what do you see when you have your brothers around you for the first time after 22 years? After they sold you into slavery, who knows where, what, how. It wasn't very nice, but as he remembers the sin that they did, and he's kind of reminding them, I'm Yosef, and he doesn't mention the brotherhoodliness that should have been amongst brothers. Ka'asher asu heimalo shehisi'u es atzmam min ha'achava. So too he did to them what they did to him, basically. They removed themselves from brotherhoodliness. Kamo Shapirish Rashi. Rashi says over there, if you look in chapter 37:17, I'm going to try to turn to it, 37:17, when it says, the man said, remember, Yosef was looking for his brothers, and he ran into this man, Eliyahu Navi. They journeyed on from here, and I heard them saying, let us go to this place called Dotan. So Yosef went after his brothers and found them at Dotan. They removed themselves from his brother heedless. And so he was chasing after it at the time. He went after their brother heedlessness, which meant that they had removed themselves. That word Yesu, it's really like travel, like sa, samech ayin. So it's to remove, to be moved from. He was just like reminding them. He removed himself from the brother heedlessness by saying, Ani Yosef. He doesn't say, I'm your brother. Just like they did when he was chasing after them, they moved on and left behind this camaraderie, this, you know, bonding that takes place between brothers. Al-Kain Amar Lehem Shenis, that's why he actually says to them, I am Yosef, Achichem Asher Michartem Osi Mitzrayma, your brother. He mentions now in the second time around that I am Yosef, your brother, whom you sold. You sold me to Egypt. Afa pi shlifachot hayalechem limchuroti le'eza uma acheres. Even though, now imagine this conversation. Even though, at least, you could have sold me to any other nation, right? I don't know how many nations there were. Imagine there could have been 70 possibilities or 69 other possibilities. And you sold me to where? To Egypt. I hate to tell you, I'm supposed to not get political here. But I've heard the way the Arabs themselves talk about Egypt. That it's like the last place on earth you want to be. Yeah. So, and we sold, the brothers sold Yosef to Egypt. And Yosef's basically saying, even you could have sold me anywhere. But you sold me, because remember he says, yeah, I'm your brother, which you sold me to Egypt. Those are the words he's using. Emphasis on Egypt. Well, you could have sold me somewhere else. She'enan shetufe zima kokak. I'm going to tell you a word about the shetufe, but I'll translate it first. That is not so engrossed in sexual immorality. So I'd like to say that is not so stooped, from the word stupe. So not so stooped in sexual immorality. Mekom mekom achichem ani. Nevertheless, I am your brother. Right, even though you sold me to a nation, the lowest of nations, so stooped in zima, in sexual immorality, nevertheless, I'm still your brother, as the verse says. Val yicher be'einechem ki mechartem osi heina limitzrayim. I just want to go back to the verse itself. So, he says... You shouldn't get upset. Don't get so angry. Just have to find the verse. He doesn't quote the whole verse. He just quotes part of it here. Because we will discuss the whole verse. So I'm going to actually quote the whole verse in English and in Hebrew. And now, be not distressed. He's not bringing that part. Do not reproach yourselves. Va'al yichar be'enechem. Don't be so angry at yourselves. Ki michartem osi hena, you've sold me here. Ki lemichya shalachani Elohim lifnechem. For it was as a supporter of life that God sent me here ahead of you. So what was he saying there? Ki roe ani, you should see. Right? You should see, this is me. Shenit galgel hadavar shabati bein shetufei zima. That there was a gilgul, there was a like gears turning, there was a domino effect. I like to think snowball. It just rolled and rolled, but it was like, you know, you push it, it just goes on its own. Well, there was a, you know, maneuvering here. There was all these dominoes that fell down in order to get me to this place, which is stooped in sexual immorality. So yeah, you're the ones that sold me here, but in the end, I became the viceroy who's supporting you. Okay? So it was through these chain of events that I've come to this place that is so stooped. V'korali mikra be'eshes Potiphar, and it occurred to me, this happening with the wife of Potiphar, Shekabashti es Yitzri, that I overcame my own evil inclination. And it was through this, of this being stooped in this sexual immoral society, that actually allowed me to become the leader, to become the shepherd of Israel, Roe Yisrael, Zan Umefarnis, who is able to deliver the goods, who can nourish you and support you, like it says, if you want to, you don't have to turn to it, but it's in chapter 49, 24, where these are the blessings of Yaakov to Yosef, specifically, Viteshe Be'etan Kashto. There's part of it skipped here. Misham Roe Evan Yisrael. So I'm going to turn to that verse. This is 49:24. It's near the end of Bereishit. 49:24. This is the blessing of Yaakov to Yosef. And the whole verse says, but his bow was firmly emplaced, and his arms were gilded from the hands of the mighty power of Jacob, from there, shepherd of the stone of Israel. Now, Rashi mentions, what's it about a bow? This is part of the idea of his ability to conquer his Yetzirah. The bow is that which shoots arrows. So it's kind of like a hint to the idea of the member down below that shoots straight arrows. Okay? And let's see. There are some interesting parts of Rashi that I want to... So there's a Medrash that says that he overcame his Yetzirah so much, he stuck his hands into the ground, and out of his hands, between his fingers, the semen protruded, meaning that he did not fall for the seduction, but rather he held himself back, and the excretion, if that's the word, came out from somewhere else as opposed to the member itself. So this is the strength, this is the Evan of Israel. He became the leader of the Jewish people through his strength and the strength of overcoming his Yetzer Hara. And Chazal, V'Rabbeinu Zainu Zal, the sages, Hiskimu L'zeh, agreed to this, as it says in Sota. Now this is a very interesting concept. Kol Habo Al Eshes Ish, any man, God forbid, that comes on to a married woman, Lesov Mevakesh Kikar Lechem, in the end he'll search for even a loaf of bread, meaning the poverty will hit him so hard, Veino Moitzi, he cannot even find. And we're going to discuss this a little bit because I copied a piece from the Ben Yehuda. I'd like to share that with you. Before we get to that, the Ilulo Hayiti Ben Shetufe Zima. This is Yosef still speaking to his brothers. If it was not for the fact that I came to this place that was so stooped in sexual immorality, Ulai Haya Nivchar Ish Acher Letikun Shnei Haraav. Perhaps a different person would have been chosen to fix, to remedy the years of famine. Avamiachar shinizdamein li, but after that, it actually occurred to me, shinimcharti la'am shetufei zima, that I was the one that was sold to this nation of Egypt and what they're known for. Lo zocha shum echad mehem letaken haraav ki imani. There was nobody amongst the population of the settlement of Egypt who was more fitting than me, because they were all stooped in Zima. How can someone who himself is impoverished and can't even find a loaf of bread, how can he be the solution to feeding an entire nation? It has to be someone who's not in that position. We'll call it a spiritual station of poverty. Im Kain, that being true, HaMechira Heina L'Mitzrayim, that sale that eventually brought me to here to Egypt, Garmali, that's what caused me, that was what brought about for me, Ki Lemichia Shalachani Elohim Lifnechem, that I was able to be the supporter and the provider that Hashem sent me before you. Okay, so before we go on, maybe we'll continue on, and then we'll get to the Ben Yehuda.
Just have a quick question.
Yes, please.
One thing I could never understand was why, in the end, Yosef marries Potiphar's daughter. Mm. Here you're talking about immorality, you're talking about he was able to withstand the advances, but then he marries his daughter. How can you reconcile that?
So there's a Medrash that tells us that this daughter, Osna, of Potiphar's wife, she was actually adopted. She was as Jewish as Yosef. She was born from Dinah, who was raped by Shechem. And
this
therefore, you can ask, as you just did, how is it that Yosef marries a local girl who stooped in the Zima? So the Medrash answers, it's not exactly like that. That she's a Jewess. I mean, when she's a Benos Yisrael, right? She's a daughter of Israel, of Yaakov. So it makes her his niece. Let's see how it works. Is that right? Or aunt? Aunt. No. First cousin? All right, we'll figure it out later. Okay. Great question. Rabbi Seinu Zal, so Chazal asked, or say, in Breishit Rabbah Amru, Shemiba Hola Zu, remember, this disconcertedment, this dumbfoundedness, this quaking or fear that overtook them, Zu Yukach Limud Al Yom Adin, this should take us to learn about Judgment Day. Whatever Judgment Day means, we should learn the lesson from their reaction to finding out that this was Yosef. Kida'ama Rabbi Elazar, like Rabbi Elazar says, Voilanu miyom adin, voilanu miyom tochecha. Woe is to us for the day of judgment. Woe is to us for the day of rebuke. Uma Yosef, what happened here in the case of Yosef? Kishamar lecha, when he said to his brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Yosef." Lo yochlu la nosoto, they were not able to utter a word. They were not able to answer him. So now we understand. Kishah Kadosh Baruch Hu omed ledin, when God Himself is standing in judgment over us. I'm just adding. Al achas kama v'kama. How much more? How are we able to open our mouths? So if we look at Isaiah chapter 10, verse 3. Uma ta'asu liyom pekuda. And what can you do? How can you act? What are you going to act? What are you going to do? What are you going to say on the day of judgment? It says over there. Ki achim savru. So the brothers thought. She Yosef. His kirovona, that was going through their mind, that Yosef was reminding them of their sin. Bederech shenitbaer, as we already explained. Uma yasa adam liyom pekuda, and what will a man do on that day of judgment? Ki yipakeid moshavo ma'asu umatano, because what's being visited upon him, that's the word here, yipakeid, it's coming to, be judged on his actions, on all of his different types of actions, when he sat, when he ran, when he did business. As it says in Job, Ubiyad kol adom yachtom, that through man, or through the hand of man, all of his actions will be sealed, will be judged. Lomar, and it says in Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 23. I didn't mention we're in Job. In Job 27, verse 7. And now we're in Yirmiyahu, chapter 2, verse 23. Re'i darkech ma'asit. God is talking to Am Yisrael. Seeing your ways. He knows everything. Whatever we do, even in the darkest of rooms. Even in the most hidden of places. Vidat Rabbi Elazar, and according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Shelekach Kosrulano Torah Echav Nivholu. This is the very reason that the Torah itself writes that the brothers were disconcerted or dumbfounded, or I'd like to say in shock, and were trembling. Kidei Shehamaskil Yitein Ez Libo Cherdat Yom Hadin. In order that the spiritually sensitive person will place on his heart, meaning pay attention, Cherdat, from the word Charedi, Cherdat is a trembling on the judgment day. Lilmod Kava Chomer Me'ache Yosef. And that we're able to learn as a consequence of logic. Kava Chomer is like that, that we should be able to learn from the reaction of the brothers of Yosef, how we are supposed to act and understand how awesome is the Day of Judgment. So I just want to bring the Gemara in Gemara Sota, on I think it's Daf Dalet Amud Bet. So it just mentions about the idea of washing hands for bread, that if you fail to wash your hands for bread, it's like you come upon an Isha Zona, which means a prostitute. And it brings down a verse in Mishle, Ki ba'ad Isha Zona ad kikar lechem. So let me find this verse in Proverbs 6:26. In Proverbs 6:26, what do we find? I'll give you the whole run for your money. 6:26. So it says, because for the sake of a licentious woman, one may beg for a loaf of bread. An adulterous woman can ensnare a precious soul. So it's really the first part of a licentious woman, and read in Hebrew, Ki ba'ad isha zona, prostitute, ad kikar lechem, you will come to beg for a loaf of bread. So based on that verse, that's why, and we're not going to get into it, if you don't wash your hands for bread, you may come to what? He says that there's a connection there. But over here now he says, Amar Rava, hi, ba'ad eshazona, ad kikar lechem, bi'ad kikar lechem, ad eshazona, mi boile, ela Amar Rava, kol ba'al eshazona, l'sob mevakesh kikar lechem. That anybody who goes after prostitutes, chases after prostitutes, uses them, in the end he will become so impoverished. So the Ben Yehuda, on this verse, on this concept in the Gemara, he says a few different things. Before I open up what he says, what do you guys think? Why is it that a man who chases a prostitute should become impoverished?
Perhaps due to infidelity, committing an infidelity against his own wife? This is your punishment.
Why? Why is that the punishment? In other words, if we think of mida keneged mida, all punishments are meted out of love, so that one would wake up and change his ways. In order to change his ways, he has to know what he did wrong. So usually, the way it works is that the punishment is measure for measure, so the person realizes what he did. Because he may have five sins. Interestingly enough, I just heard Rabbi Mizrahi on a tape, and he mentions that that's the mercy of Hashem, because what happens when you come across a certain punishment and you're trying to figure it out? So you figure out you make a cheshbon and nefesh, accounting of your soul, and try to figure it out. In the meantime, you may find five sins, so you do tshuva for all five, because you don't know which one it is exactly. So even though we say mida keneged mida, measure for measure, it's not always clear. The clearer it is, the more precise you can be to fix that one sin. But since it's not so clear, that's the mercy of Hashem, that for that one punishment, we can figure out and do tshuva for five sins and not see the other four punishments come upon us because we metakim, we fixed the four other sins on the way of fixing that one that wasn't so clear. So I don't know. I mean, first thing I thought, if someone gets very addicted to such an act, so then he'll spend all his money and he'll become impoverished. But that's maybe superficial. The way the Ben Yehudah brings it down, he says, "Kol haba al eisha zona, anyone who comes upon a prostitute, l'sob mevakesh kikalechem, in the end he will seek out a loaf of bread, ve'eno motzi, he doesn't find any." So he says, "Nearly b'siyata d'shmaya, it seems to me, with God's help to explain, the havi mida keneged mida, that this is precisely measure for measure, da'isha nikrat lechem, that a woman is called a loaf of bread. Kamo shamar chazal, on the verse, if you want to look it up, verse 39, verse 6, ki im halechem ashehu ochel, now let's look it up real quick, this is, I said 39, verse 6, in Genesis, 39, verse 6, sorry it's taking so long, so this is talking about the success of Yosef in the house. And it happened from that time, this is verse 5, and it happened that from that time he appointed him in his house, and over all that he had, Hashem blessed the Egyptian's house on Joseph's account. And Hashem's blessing was in all that he had had, and in the house and in the field. Now, verse 6. He left all that he had in Joseph's custody, and he did not know anything that was with him except for the bread he ate. Now, Yosef was handsome of form and handsome of appearance. So I'm not so sure how clear it is, but Rashi says, Ki im alechem, except for the bread, he ishto. That is his wife. Elishadiber Balashanakia. But it's speaking in a clean language, in a nice language. So the idea that a wife is considered the person's bread, and therefore what happens? So we see that it seems like, since the reason that she's called bread, it says in Bab Mitzia, Ein haparnasa mitzui betok beso shel adam ela ba'avur ishto, that the only blessing, that all the parnasa, all the welfare, all the blessings that come to a man in his house is coming to him on account of his wife. As it says also, if you look in Genesis 12:16, regarding Avraham, it's Avraham heitiv ba'avura. So let's look real quick at Avraham's relationship with his wife Sarah. It says in chapter 12, verse 16. This is also when Avraham was in Egypt, and he treated Avraham well for her sake. Obviously, we can be talking in pshat about Pharaoh, and he acquired flocks. We're talking about perhaps Hashem. Avraham was treated well for her sake, and he acquired flocks and cattle and donkeys and slaves and maidservants and female donkeys and camels. All of Abraham's wealth was on account of her, her being his wife. So we see this idea. Mitoch habayit matzai kol minei mazoin shel suda. So inside someone's house, that's where you find the mazon. Mazon is a word for nourishment and food. It's also interesting because the word for a prostitute is a zona. Very closely related. V'yedua saha suhuda nikra lechem. And we know that the concept of any suda is called lechem. And he brings down a few proofs in Daniel chapter 5, verse 1, that says, Ovid lechem ravi, made a great feast. V'chein medua lo bo ben Yishai el halechem. In Shmu Aleph, in 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 27, it also talks about a suda that David did not come to, but it uses the word El Halechem but we know that it was a suda. So here's the concept that the Ben Yehuda brings down, why it's mita keneged mita. Now we know that a wife is called bread. Va'al kein shamos b'ishto shel heter. He was disgusted by his own wife who was permitted to him. Asher halechem, which was the bread mitbarek ba'avura, shedabach b'isha zona. And he, in other words, she was the blessed one, and yet he left her and he abandoned her and went to a isha zona, a prostitute, l'chein mivakesh kikar lechem, and therefore anyone who's looking for another, you know, loaf of bread, ve'enu moitzi, and he's not going to find. We can stop there, and we'll continue on. I hope that gave you some insight to this idea, that Yosef felt he earned this, he was granted this position of mefarnes, of being able to supply a livelihood, because he did not stoop down into this world of sexual immorality. Okay, so now we're going back, and now we're going to verse 4. We're back in 45, verse 4. And I'm there. Okay. So what did Yosef say? I'll read it in English first. Then Yosef said to his brothers, "Come close to me, if you please." And they came close. And he said, remember I told you, he said, "I'm Yosef," a second time. He says, "I am Yosef, your brother, me, whom you sold to Egypt." So we're going to dissect this verse. Gashu na elai v'yigashu. As the Kliyakar mentions, he says, "Come close to me," and they came close. Hera lehem shehu mahu. He showed them that he was circumcised. Come close, real close. And he showed them that his member was circumcised. Rotsu b'zeh laharos tzidkato. He wanted to show them how righteous he was. Shehaya ben shetufei zima v'lo nikshal ba'arayot. That he was, yes, in this society, and yet he did not fall prey, he did not stumble in sexual immorality. Because there's a concept that says, this is by Jews, ki aboel aramis, any guy who would come to a non-Jew, a shiksa, a non-Jewish woman, mashka or lose, in Erevin it mentions that he would try to pull the skin that had been removed, the other remaining skin, over his member to make it appear as if he was uncircumcised. The reason for this probably is because the Jews were shunned, they were second-class citizens, and it wasn't necessarily somebody that you would, a non-Jewess, would want to be with because of their low status. So to gain a higher status, and this is what the Jewish men in the Hellenist period did as well, in we just passed Hanukkah, in order to Hellenize themselves, one of the things that they would try to do is to show, you know, in the bathhouses that they were not circumcised and they extended or pulled the skin over. Okay, so Mitzina. So what do we find? We find out that there are four things that Israel merited to be redeemed. And I think this is a true today. She Yisrael Nigalu mi Mitzrayim b'schut arba dvarim, that the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt in the merit on account of four things. Shinu et shemam, that they kept their Jewish names. They did not change their names to Gregory or Andrew. Okay, Mark, Luth. Okay, and Luke. Lo shinu et lishonam, and they didn't change their language. They kept Hebrew. And the third, shelo ayu behem ba'ali lashon hara, they weren't peddlers of gossip. And fourth, vayu gedurim me'arayot, and they guarded themselves against sexual immoral acts. And Vayikra Rabba mentions, V'tamu shel davar yidbayir b'parsha Shmos. And the Kli Yikar himself explains the reason, which we'll get to in a few weeks. Be'ezrat Hashem Yisroch, with God's help. Kamo kein kan, so too here. Yosef is revealing to his brothers the secret of what they need to do to keep themselves, let's say, Jewish, so that they would have the merit of being redeemed as the Jewish people. Sheshalach Yosef achar aviv ve'echav, and he sent after his brothers, his father and his brothers, lehodia lehem, to inform them, to make known to them, so they should know. On account of which merits of what they should do in order to be to go up away from Egypt. Eventually they're going to be redeemed, and what you need to do to guard yourselves. And he hinted to them these four things. Shayosef Shalem Bekulam. And Yosef had perfected himself, or he was complete in all four of these aspects. Number one, Shalosh Shina Shamo. He did not change his name. That's why he said to them, Ani Yosef. Now, who cares? Why would he change his name? Afa Pi Shaparu Korishmi Tzafnat Paneach. In if you look in chapter 41, verse 45, that Pharaoh called him a different name. He called him Tzafnat Paneach. But he didn't call himself that. He called himself Yosef. It's nice that he had a nickname, you know? But he didn't go by that name. He might have turned when Pharaoh turned to him, you know, called him. He wouldn't be that chutzpahdik. But he called himself Yosef. Mekom mekom ani Yosef. And even though, nevertheless, I am still Yosef. Zesh shmi le'olam. That is my name forever. I didn't change my name. That's it. V'loshina l'shono. And they should not change their language either. Shenemar, as it says, ki pi hamidaber aleichem b'lashon hakodesh. So this verse, I'm just going to show you the actual verse. It's right here. Well, I can't find it, but he said to them, that's the words he used. He spoke to them. And since he spoke to them, it was inferred that he spoke to them in Lashon HaKodesh. Loya parutz ba'arayot. And he didn't, you know, break through any fences with sexual morality. Guarded himself. The word gedur is a fence. Parutz means to break through the fence. So he was not breaking through any type of guarding when it came to keeping sexually pure. Shenemar, that's why he says, Geshu alai, come close to me, Herolehem Shehu Mahul, to show them that he was circumcised and not, as we mentioned, by pulling the skin over. Shaloaya Ba'ala Shinhara. And he also wanted to prove to them not to be peddlers of gossip. Shenemar Geshu alai, also through these words, come close to me. Why did he say, come close to me? He didn't even want Binyamin to know anything about the fact that his own brothers sold him. Binyamin was 10 years old at the time. He was a young boy. He wasn't involved. So, in the original sale. And apparently all these years, not just Binyamin, perhaps there is a doubt, but perhaps even Yaakov didn't know either. And even to his own father, he didn't say a word. That if he would have said the story about the sale to his own father, then certainly Yaakov would have commanded the sons before his own death. Sana pesha achicha, right? Place upon you the sin that you caused, the sin of the sale of your brother. V'ramazlem Yosef, and Yosef hinted to them, ki ba'avon hamachira yishamu shtarchov, but rather on the sin of selling, you actually helped pay up the obligation. We actually, you know, Avraham was told at the birth of 30 years before the birth of Yitzhak, Isaac, that his children will be slaves and they'll be wanderers, they'll be nomads, they'll be strangers in a land that's not theirs for 400 years. So during that time, Yosef was part of this traveling out of the land of Israel. So there was a part of this payment towards that 400 years. Some of these years are attributed to that. Ki ger yezarecha, you got to remember, Yaakov comes down to Egypt as a result of this as well. So this is also part of the full 400 years being outside of the land. Kemosh ne'amar, li'ato, now al te'atzvu, we said don't be distressed. Dafkata, don't be distressed now. Don't be so sad. Aval la'asid, but what's going to happen in the future? Te'atzvu, they will be sad. Al kain remez lehem gam ha'geula, therefore he hinted to them also about the redemption. V'hadvarim hamasavavim ha'geula, that all these things are going to bring about the redemption, the final redemption. We're talking about all of the staying out of the land of Israel for the full 400 years, the going down to Egypt, and the keeping of these four things and not changing them, there would be an eventual redemption. V'yesh omrim, however, some say when it says atav, atah, now, remez l'sari haruge malchut, that in the future, unfortunately, there are going to be 10 great rabbis who are going to be killed by the Romans. Shela'osid ye'atzvu ala mechira, and in the future, you will be distressed, or they will be distressed, the whole Jewish people will be distressed, because of the sale. Those 10 great rabbis that were killed, Rabbi Akiva was one of them, Rabbi Ishmael, and on, these rabbis went through an excruciating, painful death, and when they were told they were going to die, the story is that one of them went and requested from heaven to find out if this is really from heaven, and they should accept it, or they should fight it and hide and do whatever they could to fight it. And the word from heaven was, no, this is from heaven, this is a punishment for the sale of Yosef. Only 10 brothers were involved in the sale, and that's why there were 10 great sages that were killed as a tikkun, so to speak, a punishment or a fixing for this horrible sale of our brother Yosef. Okay, any questions?
I have a few.
Okay.
If you believe that in Gilgul and the sale did not take place, how would the Jewish people have gotten into Egypt?
Well, this is what Yosef is saying to them, that
he was an instrument.
Was not just me, I'm an instrument in God's hands. You are feeling guilty, and you should, but keep in mind, you don't have to feel that guilty. In other words, this is Yosef talking, not God.
No, he's taking them off the...
To a certain extent. He's not taking them off the hook. They still had free will. Okay? Like, if something has to happen, this is what I understood. Let's say, for example, at some point, the Jews had to go through whatever it was in the Holocaust. At some point. Wonder what it means, we deserved it, it was part of history, that had to happen. A man like Hitler, Yimach Shemo, didn't have to be the man that did it. It could have been anybody. Somebody had to do it. And is he off the hook? No, because he stepped into the shoes. So too with Pharaoh. If the Jews had to be enslaved for 400 years, or here in this case 210 years, or really maybe 80 years, at some point Pharaoh had to do it. But what we understood from Midrash is that Pharaoh overdid it. That's why Pharaoh was punished. Otherwise, why would God punish the person he sent on a mission? When God sends someone on a mission, he should get rewarded, not punished. I'm sure Hitler overdid it, I'm sure he's punished. I'm sure that Pharaoh overdid it, I'm sure he's punished. But in terms of trying to answer that, on one hand, there's fate, and on the other hand, there's free will. So how can it be, I think this is your question, how can it be if somebody like the brothers went ahead and sold him into slavery, why should there be a punishment at all? This only brought about the ultimate redemption. It was how they did it. They threw him into a pit, who had no water, had snakes, they sold him to Ishmaelim, who knew they were going to Egypt. Who said it had to be Egypt? Okay, so God looked into the Torah and created the world. Somehow we have to understand what that means. But we're basically pondering the equation between fate and free will. And that's a longer discussion, but I hope I gave you just a little bit of an insight to start with.
And one other point. Does the Midrash deal at all with Reuven and how he responds to when, I mean, here is the oldest brother. He was berated for not trying to save Yosef, you know, at first. He came back later and it was too late. Now when he sees that Yosef, in fact, is alive, does the Midrash deal with?
I'm not familiar with all the Midrashim, but I'll try to look into it for you. Not that anything off the top of my head.
In other words, he, being the eldest, he should have been the most responsible. Is right, that kind of the implication? Yeah.
Because it was Yehuda that stepped forward, but Yehuda already had stepped forward prior to Yaakov and mentioned that he would give himself as a guarantor. I mean, to a certain extent, Reuven already lost the bechorship, if I could use that, the firstborn rights, and then it was transferred to Levi and Shimon. Levi kind of kept, we'll call, let's say like you had Malchiot and Kahuna, whatever those represent, kingship and priesthood together in Reuven. Reuven lost it, and it was handed down Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi, to a certain extent, were in a little bit of trouble with their father Yaakov, with how they dealt with Shechem, but lo nora, it's not so bad. But Levi got it back when he didn't involve himself with the sin of the golden calf, whereas Shimon lost it due to this dealing with Shechem. So Levi kept priesthood, and kingship went down to Yehuda. So Yehuda stepped up to the plate here, and he was able to keep or earn or get back kingship. So you have, even though everything was unified in Reuven, Reuven lost it due to the situation with the beds, perhaps even with the situation here, with the original sale. But Yehuda stepped up to the plate as kingship would and should, and he got to keep kingship. So I don't know exactly, you have to see what the Medrash
just
says about Reuven.
Comment. I forget the commentary, but I read that this is the pivotal transition when you're taking brothers and they're going through a transition into tribes and into, you know, the formation of a nation. And isn't it so ironic that people who have such flawed characters, and even when Yaakov gives them the blessings, they're not praiseworthy blessings, that these are, you know, this is the formative stage of the Jewish people.
And look, they were definitely tzaddikim, and they're greater than we could even imagine. And yet the Torah mentions all their faults. That's the strength about the Torah itself, that if people claim that it was written by man, I mean, if I was a man, I was writing a book, I'd leave out all the faults, you know? So the fact that our own historical document is so chock full of, well, let's use the word faults, even for, as we see by Yehuda and different things, and for sure by David and so on and so forth, that it stands up to testify that this is beyond the human reasoning as an author. Because a human author would never have left so many faults. That's my, I don't know if that helps, but...
And also might help to inspire others to achieve greater than what they might otherwise, seeing how even these great individuals had plenty of faults, just as, you know, anyone else would today.
Any other questions? All right, have a good Shabbos, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom.